for the podcast. Looking forward to seeing how this goes. Let us know what you think about it. Let's get into the first episode. Let's go. Now, to introduce each person, you know, we have an amazing, you guys introduce yourselves. Could be starting with you, introduce yourself to the audience, and, you know, give us like a fun fact about yourself.
A fun fact, wow. My name is Ryan Hinkson. I run an Instagram account called Eat Famous, just over 280,000 followers, content creator, also the food expert on the CTV's The Good Stuff. And a fun fact about me is that although I make my living traveling and eating food, I was the pickiest eater when I was a kid.
Ketchup and chicken nuggets.
That's it. Yeah.
Ketchup and chicken nuggets.
Hey, so I'm Zachariah Thomas. I'm the president and founder of many different companies, but I guess the main company is Swift Hockey. I'm a young entrepreneur, and I'm also play on the National Jamaica Olympic hockey team.
Can you have a round of applause for that real quick?
Yeah, so that's about it for me.
Yo, so my name is Mark LaFleur. I am the former CEO and co-founder of True Local. So over the course of 5 years, built that to $16.7 million acquisition in 2020. So thank you for them snaps. So as a kid who had holes in his shoes, you know, it's kind of crazy to be here and share a story with you right now. Interesting fact about me is that a week and a half ago, I was at the Starship launch in Texas watching Elon launch a skyscraper into space, so that was kind of cool.
All right, so I want to jump right into it. One of the things you guys have both done is sell a business for over $1 million, you know? Zach, let's start with you. What was it like when that first check hit your bank account?
For sure. So obviously, it comes in different lump sums. Ours was breaking up many different ways, but being 18, 19 with that amount of figures in my bank account was something different that I can't even explain. It kind of leaves me in shock having that. And also being that age, I was pretty crazy. I spent 90% of the whole check on stuff that doesn't matter. Cars, shoes, watches, every little thing I spent the check on. I spent it on all my friends, but that was kind of a good experience. I learned from that, obviously. Spending a lot of money at a young age gives me a lot of time to kind of bounce back and see what that feels like firsthand.
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, we want the short answer or the long answer?
Give us the long
answer. Yeah, I think, like, you know, I grew up, like I said, with holes in my shoes. And, you know, I knew at a really early age that I was financially motivated. Like, that was the thing for me. And I think a lot of people nowadays like to make you feel bad for that. It's like, oh, you should want more than money. And it's like, well, if you're struggling to pay rent, you know, money's a pretty damn good motivator. So for me, it was probably like when I graduated high school that I realized I wanted to make money. And I also knew I was going to make money. Like, I just had, there was no resume that would ever have somebody bet on me for making it. But like, I knew that I was going to make it. And when True Local started, I think that was kind of like the only thing that kind of kept me going was that, like, if I just keep going, I'm going to make this cash. Like, I'm going to get this first bag. And my first goal was to sell my first company before the age of 30. And for anybody that's followed the True Local story, like, we were a direct-to-consumer food business in 2015 to 2020. That was like a bloodbath. That was hyper-competitive. That was, we had to build a website. We had customer service. We had warehouses to manage. Like, it was actually a horrible business idea to sell meat online. But we made it through somehow, and you know, I thought about that moment so many times. Like, I just knew that I was like, this is what I'm here to do. Like, I want to hit this goal by 30. So the craziest thing was that when the check hit, we did 10 months of due diligence. So due diligence is essentially when someone wants to buy your company, they put you under contract that you can't shop the deal around. And they do 10 months of pretty much just trying to look at the skeletons you have in the closet. And at any point in time, they can just pull the rug on you. And you weren't allowed during that time to go shop the deal anywhere else. So it's this really vulnerable time. And that was usually something that would take about, you know, 30 to 90 days. But for us, it was 10 months. Anyway, where I'm going with this is that the deal had to close by the end of the year. So, and like, we're talking about a kid here who had like all of his, like, it was all credit card debt. I was paying myself $30,000 a year. Like, we were dead ass broke. And we're staring down the barrel of a $16.7 million check. And every day we were just waiting for a call for someone to be like, yo, no, not happening. So we were getting to the finish line. The deal had to close in 2020. And every week in December, it kept getting pushed. Eventually, we hear that we're going to close on December 31st, New Year's. And the reason for that is because it was supposed to close the week before, but we couldn't get papers signed by the banks because who at the bank is responding and trying to get the stuff done, and the lawyers are all trying to go on vacation. So we didn't even know if the deal was going to close. And it got to a point where pretty much me and my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, were like, can we swear here? All right, like, fuck it. Let's just go out for dinner. And whatever happens, happens. So we're out for dinner. We get the call from our lawyer saying, hey, are you guys available for a call right now? Now, we thought it was going to be for the deal to close, but we didn't even know. We're just like, all right, let's go back to the place. Anyway, we get the call, and it's this surreal moment where you can kind of tell, like, pick up the phone. The voice is a little different. It's a little bit of positivity. Like, hey, all right, are you guys ready to close? And we're like, absolutely. So that was the moment. Like, that 9 p.m. I think in Vancouver, or 8 p.m. Vancouver time, right before midnight, the deal closed. It was done. I call my lawyer back to be like, yo, is this real? Like, there's no, you know, give backs or anything like that. It's like, no, the deal's closed. The bank, like, check should hit, you know, in a week, give or take. And the craziest thing was that it wasn't this, like, wild, ridiculous surprise, which I kind of missed that for a moment, to be honest. But for me, it was like I believed it for so long that it was just like, all right, like, about time. Like, I fantasized about that moment for so long that it wasn't this crazy incitement. It was like, okay, like, all the stuff I worked for, all the stuff that I put my time and effort into, I was right. So that's the thing that, you know, when everybody asks how the company sold, it's like, if you were destined for that, it's not about all the stuff that necessarily comes with it, which is sick, by the way. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with the watches and the clothes and all that. I love it. But it, for me personally, it was this, like, validation that I was exactly who I said I was. Like, that was kind of the thing, so.
Yeah, I'm big. So a lot of us want to get there. You know, that's one of the biggest wealth transfers that we can access. But our mindset has to be there as well, right? So what changes did you have to have, you know, because this is not your first business for either one of you, that you made from business one to business two that allowed you to get to that point?
Yeah, just like, don't sweat the bullshit. Like, so many people spend so much time about, like, a logo or, like, oh, should I do this? Should I not do this? Like, it doesn't matter. You're probably wrong anyway. Just go do it. Figure out what didn't work and then try something again quickly. Like, that right now, like, I'm on my next business. And the I think about it very often. Like, what am I taking from the previous stuff to here now? And, like, the first time around, everything matters. Everything. Your domain matters. The name of your company matters. The logo matters. Is this ad perfect? Is this blog post good? Like, whatever. Nobody cares, honestly. It really doesn't matter. It's what makes a business successful isn't one action. It's repeated actions over a long period of time. So you're not going to nail it the first time you do it. You're going to nail it by doing it a lot and having it be bad and iterate on it. So I think that that's the biggest thing is, like, don't sweat the bullshit. Just get started and get better as you go. That's probably, like, the single biggest thing that I think has helped after having gone through it once.
For sure. So we people always toy around with businesses, as you guys know, have these ideas of something that we just do. Like, us as entrepreneurs, us in the crowd, we just do business. It's something that we do every single day. We do everything business. So that's something that we were kind of meant to do throughout my life and just doing business. I know I said that a bunch of times, but it's literally just getting there and doing to the point. So to that, I guess doing what we did as entrepreneurs, as business owners, it's something that I used to run the whole business by myself. The first couple businesses I ran by myself. What I noticed as soon as I got extra money and extra finances, you hire out more team. So it frees up my time and then it makes the business grow ultimately. So I can focus on other aspects of the business. And that was something that I really learned throughout my businesses. The first business I created and sold, it was more of a drop shipping company where we're not branding a product in a sense, we're selling other people's products or we're selling a product that's already big. The next business was something that I branded myself. It was my story, my background. So it was two different worlds that I guess we were both in, but it was branding a product is so difficult, and that's something that we put a lot of time and a lot of research in, and that's why we hired out a lot of different times overall.
Now, one thing that's interesting between all three of y'all is we all need to market our businesses, right? Now, you are in the organic growth, you know, whereas you, with truLOCAL, were in the paid growth with paid channels, spending upwards of $200,000 a month, you know, and you are growing your business organically on Instagram, you know. So I'm interested here because, especially a food creator and a food business, you would be paying Ryan on some cases because truLOCAL would be paying for, you know, you to create content for them. So it's an interesting dynamic we have right here. You know, so when it comes to working with influencers and creators, how do you validate what's actually worth your money versus what's not? And how do you validate where you are delivering an ROI for your clients?
You want me to go?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. So I'm very opinionated and harsh on influencers. So what I want to do is I want to carve out that there is a small number of influencers who are absolutely fantastic and absolutely worth the money and the real deal. There's one right here. So everything I'm saying is the opposite of what this man is doing right now with his Instagram pages. Now, the problem is there are so many people that see the success that someone like this has had and think they can just go replicate it and front run it and speed run it. And they provide no value. And really what they're just trying to do is get you to spend money with them when they have no authenticity in their brand. They work with anybody who's willing to spend a dollar with them. And they provide no tracking, no reporting, no way of actually seeing whether this was worth the dollars or not. And that's the majority of the business. But the thing to understand is that's like anything, right? 80% of the value is created by 20% of an industry or influencers or anything, really. Agencies are the same way. So the thing I look at right off the bat is I actually made a post about this, you know, sort of the hierarchy of information. What I mean by that is that you can really figure out if you're dealing with a real one real quick based on what sort of metrics they're talking about. If you're talking to me about impressions and you're talking to me about your follower count, I don't give a shit. Okay, I don't care. I can get impressions anywhere. Do you really want to sit down and play the game? If I go ahead and figure out what my impression cost is on Google, on Amazon, on Instagram, on Facebook, on bus benches, on whatever, like we can break that down. Impression is an impression. And if you're telling me your impressions are worth more than another one, that's a hard sell. You got to go down a level. So for me, the next thing would be like, okay, if you're talking about clicks, okay, I'm a bit more interested. So you're going to tell me I'm going to get you this many clicks that are going to drive to my website. That I can begin to have a conversation with an influencer. And I don't even know a lot that start there. A lot of them would be like, here's my following count, here are my impressions. Then you start talking to the real ones who are like, listen, you know, here's my audience size. Here's the average click-through rate that I get. Brands that I've worked with in the past have received this many click-throughs. I follow up with them, and they've told me they've generated this much money. That's what I'd like to do for you. In fact, I'm willing to do a flat rate retainer just to make sure that the risk is taken care of, but I'll actually give you a performance deal where it's like, you know what, if you pay me $5 per sale that comes through, I'm very interested in doing that because I believe in my audience being able to do that. That to me is like, that's a relationship. That's something we can build something cool and really go down that road. So they're very few and far between. But that's like how we look at influencer marketing on the paid side. And the other thing I'll say is that these are not related. Paid advertising and organic, there's black boxes on both sides. And I have so much respect for people that grow social media organically because I'm just trying to figure it out now. And it is like a soul-crushing game that you have to go through to get good at it and understand it. So the ones that do it well, like that's a serious art.
Yeah, also I'll kind of pick up where Mark hit in terms of relationships. So I almost look at it like dating. So, you know, you look at somebody, we're visual creatures, right? You're going to be like, oh, I like that Indochino suit they're wearing, or that six-pack abs, or that shape, or whatever it is. For me, like, that's like my follower account. So I might have one of the larger followings in the city. At an eye's glance, that's great. Like, it might mean something, but it doesn't mean everything. And I think that's just like dating. Like, you could see the baddest looking person doesn't mean that they're worth anything, right? You start getting into deeper things. So do I follow through, right? Those are the kind of things that, like, you start to check little boxes. Would you look at my interaction with my following? Have you ever had, you know, a client that has had a bad experience with you? Am I following up? All these other kind of things that you can kind of mirror in personal relationships it plays out the same way with influencers or anybody that you're doing business with. Surface things are great. I always tell a story. One of my clients, it's a restaurant client, a spot called Rudy. Back when they started working with me, they had the one restaurant. They're about to open the seventh. When they reached out to me at first, they were like, hey, we would love to work with you on social. And instead of doing what I did best, I was like, oh, wow, this is the first person that wants to actually like hire me, a company that wants to like put me on a retainer. So I get out of my element, and I concoct this really big contest, and like they spend a lot of money on me, they spend a lot of money on the prize, and it does nothing. Like, it falls completely flat. And this is early Instagram, before a lot of saturation, before a lot. This is when like the algorithm let everybody see everything. And I was embarrassed. I was super embarrassed. I had these people's money. I had my reputation at stake. There was a big part of me that was like, take the money and run, tuck your tail behind your legs, and just kind of go away. But I knew, because this is something I wanted to do, I had to figure something out. So I said, I assessed the situation. I figured out what I did wrong, which was not doing me. And then what I extended to them, I said, hey, I know. Because even they were polite about it. Oh, you know, these things happen. But when you're spending money, those things don't happen. You want return. So I said, I'm thinking to myself, like, Ryan, what do you do? You know how to grow a following. They're new. Help them grow their following. I tell them, you know what? Give me 3 months to grow your following at $0. If I do it, I'm not expecting anything after, right? But let me make this up. Did it cost me a little bit more time? Was that 3 months of work that I couldn't do paid? Yes. But we turn their Instagram around. They credit me with having multiple locations. It's a relationship that I've had for 7 years, right? And what did it cost me? It cost me being honest with myself, assessing my mistakes, and understanding that, as like Mark said, a relationship is everything, and you fix it. My wife and I had the biggest fight we've had in years a couple days ago. Did I just leave? No, you fix things, right? If you're talking about longevity, long term, and seeing things past today, and I think that's what you're gonna get, right? Like, I feel like companies work with me because I'm the best, and that's my self-assessment. Now, being the best isn't like you check every box, but you're checking multiple boxes. You're checking more than the average person. Do I have the very best content? No, right? But do I have content that's increasingly been better over time? Absolutely. Does every post get 50,000 likes? No. But do I have posts that have 5 million views, 27 million views, Michael B. Jordan commenting, Rick Ross commenting? Yes. Every time, no, right? So an assessment of like what being the best is, as motivation, and valuing relationships, I think, is like the biggest thing in terms of proving your worth to a company.
Big jam, big jam. Now, I want to touch on what you said, Mark, about creating an organic following as soul-crushing, you know? And Ryan, I want to speak to you and get your opinion on it, you know? Because a lot of us are entrepreneurs and content creators at the same time. Because without creating content, you're non-existent right now in social media land. So what can you say to people that are trying to build their following up in 2024, trying to get to that next stage of getting to that, next stage of growing the following?
Wow. You know what, I could be very candid here, because I feel like I definitely had time on my side. That's not taking away from any work that I put in. Very different playing field when I started. I jokingly tell people when they're like, how do I start an Instagram today? I'm like, don't. Because like it's not the same space every moment of this. Like, as that clock ticks, somebody else is jumping on, and not just a brand new person, people that already have multiple accounts, multiple presence. Things are constantly changing. I think understanding why you're doing this, Mark touched on it earlier too, where people I get a million DMs saying, oh man, you must eat for free all the time, how do I do this? Like, immediately, you know that person doesn't understand the landscape. Like, I feed myself, I feed my family with this. This is not about getting burgers and fries, right? So I think really kind of understanding the field that you're going to enter into from a very, very, like, well-rounded perspective is huge.
Yeah, like, yo, you're hearing from the master. Like, I got 3,000 followers, okay? So, you know, it kind of hit me like a rock when I realized that right now, I started driving race cars, and part of driving race cars is getting sponsorship. And the thing that I bring to the table that other drivers don't is that I have a business background. So I can come in and understand the needs of the business and say, hey, listen, how can we drive revenue for you? And we would get all the way there. That would always open doors for me. Like, that was a really great way to open doors. I could open doors that other people couldn't. But when it came down to close a deal, the next thing they ask is, well, what's your social media following? So I used to kick and scream and be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I don't want 100 million people who don't know who I am that like my stuff. But what I can tell you is I know, 100 of the most influential people in Canada that I'll pick up the phone when I call. So let's make a deal. And they didn't care. So with where I'm at right now in my life, not having a social media presence is actually taking away from my opportunities. I'm not doing it the other way around, where I think that I have nothing to offer and I should start a social media account because then people will want me. It's the other way around. I'm just losing from everything I've learned, everything I've done, everything I've accrued in my life, from the network to the resources, is actually being stifled by not having a social following. So that's my problem. So I decided this past year that I need to double down on my content creation. Now, what I want to tell all of you, and just to give you guys a little bit of hope, at least in case your social game isn't popping, I always say I'm a young black founder who sold his company for $16.7 million. I have a book deal with Forbes. I travel the world with my wife. I drive race cars and I run marathons. And I have 3,000 followers. Okay? So trust me when I say it is difficult to break into this. All right? So the reason I say that is that now what we decided to do was that we're posting 3 pieces of content per day, per platform, across the board. And I'm investing heavily in that. You know what my average view is right now? 2,000. Okay? So I like to think my content's okay. I think there's value in it. It's really a lot of short-form podcast clips like this or me talking about business advice. So the reason I'm saying this, because when, you know, we're hearing the idea that social media is becoming harder and harder and harder, just think about that. That's like the level of that where it's at. So what I want to do is make a post at some point when I get my first one that goes viral. And I want to show people, here's how much money I spent. Here's how many pieces of content I posted just to get one post to go viral. So where I'm going with this is that there are way better, more talented people in the social game who understand the algorithm. They're going to build content and they're going to build an audience that has the ability to grow faster than your own personal brand. Because I think, and I could be wrong here, but I think the faster way to build social media is not necessarily to build your brand. It's to find a niche that's really hot right now.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So the idea, I guess, is if you want to build a social media following just from just for the sake of having a big page, you're probably going to want to choose a niche, double down on that niche with content for that niche. That's the way you can really get it going. It's difficult when it's a personal brand. But the reason I want to share this with people is just to show, because I feel I hear kids all the time, they post twice a week and I suck because they haven't blown up yet. And I just want to show to be like, listen, like, if I'm struggling, of course you guys are going to struggle. Like, of course this is a difficult thing. Don't feel bad about it. Just find the way to make it happen. So that's like my thing with organic content right now. And I don't necessarily know where it's going. Like, I don't know if it's going to continue with short form being king, or is it going back to long form, or what's the game. But it's a serious game for sure.
Yeah. Now, Zach, I want to talk to you because, you know, you are growing a product business, Swift Hockey, through organic, no pay. No, that's a big challenge. Not only are you not growing a personal brand, you're growing a physical product business. Talk to us about what's working for you organically.
For sure. So I think we're probably doing the craziest thing in business possible. I'm a black entrepreneur in the hockey industry, selling hockey sticks, competing against the biggest Nikes, Adidas of the industry, and we're making a good stand. And the reason that all this is going on, I would say, it's because of me. And as much as that sounds a little bit vain, but when we post a video, you see a black hockey player in the video, it's going to trend. That's what we have noticed overall. Mm-hmm. Every video we almost touch is hitting 10,000 at a minimum to at least 1 million, and that's because it's a black hockey player. I think if we were in different industries, it'd be a different ball game. I'm a black former hockey player. We've done a lot, been on Dragon's Den. I've played former professional hockey, so that actually leverages a lot all overall. But yeah, our organic game is pretty crazy, I would say. We have spent $0 on advertisement. And to this date, our business have done probably around $2-3 million with $0 of advertisement. So I think that's probably the craziest thing that we have done. A lot of what's going on with our business is because of me. I would like to say because I played all over the globe, Florida, Connecticut, I played with Europe guys, Russia. So every time I post, I'm getting posts from all over the globe. And our product is such a product that everybody needs in the hockey industry. So it gets that attention no matter what.
So do you think that's going to be the consistent thing to rely on going forward? Or do you feel like there's a pivot that needs to be made to continuously, you know, build that traffic?
For sure. So I think there's definitely a pivot to be made. We've been seen on all of the major publications. The NHL gives us articles every 2-3 months, which is the major hockey league. We've been seen on CBC, and a lot of what's going on, I would say, is we create controversy. The CBC, for example, posted an article about us, I think, 3 days ago. I'm getting destroyed in the comments. Destroyed. And the main reason for that is because I'm a black entrepreneur, and I said, what the article kind of talks about is that I never wanted to put my face on the business. I'm in a hockey industry. I never wanted to put my face in the business, but I wanted to change the industry. And it ended up coming that way because of Dragon's Den. My face was in the business a lot. And that's what happened. And I think I see the most crazy stuff in the comments. Some of our videos that go viral, it's because people are bashing me. What is this guy yapping about? All this stuff above. So obviously controversy creates a lot of that. And I think our product alone is something that's not done in the industry at all. It's kind of untouched.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, make sure you send a DM to me at 247Hustler. And make sure while you're there, you can give us a follow, 247Hustler. And in a moment, we're going to have a Q&A period. This way, we don't have to pass the mics. It'll be an easier process. So follow us at 247Hustler. While you're at it, you can follow Indochino as well, seeing that they've given us this amazing space. And know that they are offering 20% off all of their suits or whatever purchase you make today or within the next 2 weeks. All right, so working towards wrapping up, I want to ask, let me double down to my questions real quick. All right, so with Dragon's Den, Zach and Mark, one of the main things that I noticed, especially for you, Zach, I talked about this in our podcast episode, yes. That I almost threw my phone when I saw your deal specifically, because you had a deal with the NHL, you have the Jamaican Hockey League, or just hockey team, pardon me, behind you, and you valued your business at $250,000 at the time. I was like, how is this possible? Because that's obviously valued a lot more. What made you choose that number?
So, yeah, obviously that year alone, we did way over $250,000. The point of going on Dragon's Den is to get the leverage, get the coverage. I would say if I went on Dragon's Den and I valued my business wrong, and nobody would care. If I went on Dragon's Den and I didn't receive a deal, I wouldn't be able to leverage anything. So I went on there kind of looking for a deal more so, looking for a deal and a partner in a sense, rather than overvaluing my business. I've watched probably before Dragon's Den 10,000-15,000 hours of video, and every time I saw somebody not get a deal is because they overvaluated. So that was something I really wanted on. I went on Dragon's Den, and I knew it would kind of benefit us if we did get a deal, and that's kind of why I valued it at that.
Got you. Now, I want to tap into your mindset a little bit as you work towards wrapping up. I spoke to your mom briefly, and she talked to me about a time in Florida where you decided to call back and talk to her about getting a house at 17. Break down what happened there.
Yeah, so obviously, I traveled all around the world playing hockey. Every time I come home, it was pretty crazy all over. We were in a pretty good area that's kind of getting bad. A lot of bad people are around me, all around me. My friends were kind of getting bad, doing drugs. And that was something that I always wanted to stay away from. I always had this kind of clear mind. Staying sober, being hustled, like hustling 24/7, as the podcast is. And doing everything possible to kind of be an entrepreneur. I told my mom when I was in Florida that we gotta go because this stuff was happening. I saw my friends getting stabbed, my friends getting shot. Two neighborhoods beside me is the craziest thing that I knew we had to go, or I was gonna be involved in some dangerous activities. So that was something that I kind of pushed my mom to go forward on, and since then, we've all been pretty good, and I've been safe and obviously successful since then. But I think if that situation and I stayed in that situation, I don't know what would have happened to me.
Now, she told me something about a house that you found. You know, what happened there?
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of the same situation overall. I always love shopping. I'm a shopper overall. I'm on Facebook 24/7, Facebook Marketplace, looking at houses, cars, every little thing, because I'm just a shopper overall. I stumble across this house, and it was kind of a gold mine. Right now, my family's out in, I guess, the Scugog area, if you're too familiar with that. Pretty far, an hour and a half away from here, but we're in the Scugog area overall. There was a 2-acre house that we found, and it was around $500,000. What my parents did, we came in the house, we gutted the house. We have 2 acres now. We have two different man caves, pools, tennis, basketball court. We have all of it, and we kind of made that sacrifice and moved away, and that was kind of the situation with moving.
Amazing, amazing. All right, awesome. Now, ladies and gentlemen, who has a question that I'd like to ask? All right, so Patrick has a question. Isaac, do you mind giving Patrick a mic? Amazing. And after that, you'll follow it up with Tristan.
When you were starting your business, True Local, and you had to now go and find your client base, so these were people that would be comfortable purchasing meat online, which is interesting, how did you find that clientele online, and what was your strategy to double down and build your clientele large enough at scale?
Great question.
Yeah, so I think the reality is it's a little bit more of a complex question than just how do we find clients online. I think a lot of people want to know how to grow a business, like what's the silver bullet, but the reality is there is no silver bullet. It's a lot of tiny little things that when looked at from afar can look like a silver bullet. So the reason I'm saying that is that when we started, it was 2015 going into 2016, we didn't start with ads. We actually didn't run ads probably till the first year. So we did trade shows. We would show up at pop-up shops, at like gyms. CrossFit was big for us. And then once we started getting a little bit of cash, the question became, and then, you know, you asked the question like, hey, are you going to stick with organic? The answer to that, not necessarily for your business, but in general, is you're never going to stick with one strategy. You're going to use that strategy until it runs out of steam, and then you're going to go on to the next strategy. And the idea is, as you go into a strategy, you go deep on that strategy. You try to figure out and set up systems and process so that strategy can run on autopilot, bring in the same amount of customers for a cheaper cost if possible, and then you take your resources and time and try to develop a new strategy. So now you've got two strategies working for you, and each of those are their own mini game. So that's the thing. So where I'm going with this is that when we got into ads, we didn't know shit about online advertising. All I knew is that you could essentially pay money and have Facebook distribute, you know, that content. So we would start with like, okay, why don't we create a couple images and videos and throw them on Facebook? We would do everything. We would do both. We would do ads, and we would also do boosted posts. The boosted posts for us worked really well on giveaways and contests. This wouldn't work today, but it worked in 2017, 2018. The magic about finding an audience online through ads specifically, or just in general?
Let's do it through...
We can do both real quick. So through ads specifically, the whole point is like, how are you defining your audience? So are you finding an audience based on the interest categories that the platform is giving you? So I know that I want to go after athletes. I know I want to go after chefs. I know I want to go after... The platforms will give you the ability to do that. That's if you have no idea who your audience is. You're kind of fishing in the dark. You have an assumption. You tell the system, the platform, that you want to go after these types of people. But what starts to happen over time is as you're running ads, you're going to start to see who is in fact engaging with those ads. And almost guarantee it's not going to be who you think you are. But you'll be able to take that information and take that data and say, damn, it wasn't chefs and it wasn't athletes. For us, gardening. Like, take that in. One of the best performing audiences we went after were people that also so happened to like gardening stuff. Doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no correlation, but that's who was buying. So then now you start marketing to them. And you start taking the content that you created, and it's not so generic anymore. Now you're going to tailor the content to people who are gardening, because now it's going to resonate more. And you rinse and repeat that.
And then did you hire did you eventually hire a marketing company to handle that for you?
Yeah, great question. So in my book, I have a whole chapter about working with the agencies. There's no right or wrong answer. We did both. And what I mean by that is that at some times, you want an agency. At other times, you want to do it in-house. The best thing about an agency, or actually, I guess, here's the thing that most people fail at when it comes to working with agencies. They bring on an agency, and then they just back off. Oh, the agency's got it covered. They'll reach out to me in a month and let me know how it's doing, and I'm just going to forget about it. That's like the most, you shouldn't be a founder, honestly. That's the most irresponsible thing ever. You're about to pay this person how much money to manage it. You have to at least have a bare minimum understanding of what's going on. You don't have to be an expert, but like read one article, because then you can hold them accountable. So what I would suggest is if you ever do want to use an agency, the best thing you're going to get from an agency is not the results. It's shadow the shit out of them so you can learn as much as you can about what they're doing so you can hold them accountable to what they're doing. So that's that part of it. The second part of it, once again, when we started off, we did it in-house. I ran the ads myself for about 6 months. Then my role started needing to change. So I'm like, shit, I gotta, you know, do other things. Let's talk about bringing on a freelancer or an agency. And that made sense at that time. Then we got bigger again. Like, let's say a year later, we got bigger. I'm like, you know what? We're not getting what we need from this agency. Let's hire someone full time. We had the money. We hired someone full time. And then again, we went to a point where it's like, this person full time is now going to upgrade to oversee all of the marketing. They're not going to do the Facebook ads anymore. Let's go back and bring an agency back in. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just what works for your business at the time.
Now, let's see. Tristan has a question. Then we'll end up with Kyle. And then that'll be it for tonight. Can you DM me the question? Then maybe I can ask it quickly.
I guess I'll stand because I don't know if you guys can see me. All right, so my name is Tristan. I'm an illustrator. I work in the arts and entertainment industry, so like comic books and video games and stuff like that. And one of the things I have trouble with is pretty much like marketing to the right people. I find that when you are on Instagram, like it's, for me personally, I've noticed this, is that I've my Instagram, my friends like my stuff, and all, you know, everyone in my circle likes my stuff. But when it comes to getting that go further than, you know, the friends, how do you get past that? How do you scale upwards into finding the right people? I know you kind of answered a little bit, but kind of, I guess, to everyone, because there's products and services in between all of you. I want to know how to like take that and scale it upwards. My niche is like pinup and drawing black women, pretty much. So I want to know like what's the best way in terms of scaling that up into different people? Because two things. I've, on one account I have that has nothing to do with pinup or illustration. It's just like I collect cars. I'm into racing like you are. These 164 diecast cars, I meet people in the hobby shops and they follow me and they religiously like my stuff and they want to know when I'm going to do something. Whereas on the other account, people, my friends, like what I do, but it doesn't go further than that. So like how do I scale outwards to different people marketing-wise to kind of like, what are ways I can, I guess,
I would say, and I'm, I hate answering questions with questions, but do you, because I know I did this. This was a, like a big mistake I made early on in my career with IG. Anytime I did anything, especially if it was opportunity-based, like, oh, I've got, you know, this campaign with somebody and I was really trying to impress people, like the client, I mean, I would always send it to all of my friends and be like, please like this, please like this, please like this. But have you ever like told your friend to watch a movie? They never watched it. You're like, this is the best song. They don't listen. Like, you're going to get so much support from people, but at the end of the day, it's really going to be about your target and your customer. So I found that I was targeting people that I felt like, whether they were friends, like people that I could depend on for likes. Those aren't necessarily your partners or your clients' target, right? So I always ask myself, like, when I'm putting something out, I'm like, if somebody else put this out, would I like it? That's like my number one question. If I was scrolling, does this get my attention? And then I don't stop it, would I like it? Would I share it? Would I save it? So I'm always inward now with like measuring my own work and having a lot of very honest conversations about myself with like, if this was unrelated to me and I was detached from this, is this something that I would enjoy? And then beyond enjoying it, sharing it and holding on to it. That's a big start for myself.
Lastly, we'll wrap it up on Kyle. As we get the mic to Kyle, I just want to thank some of our sponsors. Shea Moisture is one of our biggest sponsors. Shout out to Shea Moisture. We also have Courtney Frazier, Frazier Legal Group. If you have any legal questions, make sure you reach out to Courtney. And Indochino, lastly, once again, if you have any questions about suits, make sure you reach out to Indochino. And Sir and Lex. Shout out to Sir and Lex in the building.
All right, guys, thanks for coming out and speaking to us. My very quick question is, I heard a lot of you guys speak on, obviously, individually what you've done for your businesses, but could you touch on partnerships? Because I know how important that is. And when I say more so not partnerships, your co-founders, because I'm sure they say no man's an island, right? Who has been there helping you? Mentioned your wife. I don't know if she's a co-founder. Could you guys touch on who's actually helped you build your business?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I probably have one of the craziest stories on who kind of helped the business around. I've had a 17-year-old kind of help me throughout, guy 4 years younger than me, help me learning and kind of going through my business, dealing with all the challenges, kind of being my number two throughout everything. Right now, we do hire a lot. We hire 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, and we have a 17-year-old actually running most of that business and dealing with that, which is pretty crazy overall. But yeah, I guess to your question, partnerships is something we have been on. That's our biggest thing overall, is we haven't done any paid advertisement. We have partnered with every single organization possible, and a lot of that is due to just reaching out. It doesn't matter how big the company is. We have a partnership with Nike, BioSteel, the NHL, which is one of the biggest organizations, and it just happened from reaching out. And it's not just, it's reaching out to every sort of email you can see, trying every single avenue, going on LinkedIn, trying to find who runs which department. It's reaching out on every single field to kind of figure out what's best.
Did that answer your question, or was it more on co-founders?
Yeah, like co-founders, like early stages, who actually helped you guys build? Like from when you had one follower, right. Was it just you or?
I have to give a lot of credit to a friend of mine. And Alex always talks about the ability to pivot. Eat Famous was not supposed to be an Instagram account about like food. I was approached by someone who had seen an article that I had written. They said they liked my communication style. They had a business plan for a business that was going to help restaurants during slow periods and help people save money. And they were like, hey, we need someone in marketing communications, I have a marketing background. So I looked at his business plan. I thought it was great. And started just going with him to restaurants to kind of collect data. And at the same time, it was when people were just starting to like take pictures of their food. So I just started doing it. And then I had mentioned to him, hey, some branding on social might help. And so, it was kind of really born without, I wasn't able to foresee what, you know, influencer marketing was going to be like. So there's always people like in part of your journey that are part of the team, I feel, in like a weird way. Even my peers, when I first started posting pictures, sometimes you couldn't tell if it was a cheesesteak or cheesecake. Like I was shooting on an iPhone 3. I didn't understand composition, lighting, but within community, hey, like why do you always walk your plate to the window, right? Why do you like try to book daytime shoots, or what lens are you using? You know, that being inquisitive, building strong community that you can trust to give you with information and sharing that back. I count those people as co-founders. I travel a lot and I have to be away from home. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm not having dinner with my 4-year-old daughter, right? So even my wife, my parents, anybody who kind of like lends a hand to me is part of like the business.
Yeah, like every business starts different, right? I speak a lot. I talk to founders every single day. Like, that's pretty much what I do at this point. And the number one biggest risk to any business is co-founder drama. Most businesses don't get killed by the competition. They get killed internally. And if you believe that, then the number one killer internally is going to be co-founder drama. So I like to look at co-founder relationships as there really only is one thing that you need. Well, actually, a couple things. So right off the bat, like, you have to have the mentality of a real relationship, right? Like, you can't have this Tinder swipe left type mentality of, as soon as you get into one problem, okay, yep, this isn't going to work. Like, if you go into that in a business, you're screwed. So don't even start there. You have to be in a situation where you realize you pretty much are getting married to this person, literally. And you need to have, in my opinion, you don't have to like them. You don't have to be friends with them. You have to have respect for them. That's all that matters. Because there are going to be situations where you fight, and you should fight. You should fight very hard with your co-founder. However, that fighting is always productive as long as there is a mutual respect. So in my opinion, that's the thing to look for more than anything. Don't go into business just because they're your friend. That's a fantastic best case scenario. Who doesn't want the dream of, I started a company with my best friend and we made $10 million. That's what everybody wants. But the reality is the more likely result is going to be something that requires a little bit more work. So I would just say, don't stress so much about liking your co-founder. That's just a cherry on top. You need to have deep respect for your co-founder, and they have to have deep respect for you. So that's the one thing I would say going through. I literally have an entire chapter in my book called The Bullshit Conversations, which is about having these hard, deep conversations before you guys decide to become co-founders. What do you want out of this? What are you bringing to the table? What do you want me to bring to the table? Are you looking to build something that we're going to build until we sell, or are you looking to build something that you never want to sell? All of these types of things are things that you want to know early on, because you don't want to wait to have those conversations, because when you wait to have those conversations, everything's Mickey Mouse. You want to start a company? Yeah, let's do it. You know, you have these aspirational dreams. You think you're going to get there, but you don't see the dollars in front of you. Wait till your company starts bringing in customers and investors start coming to the table, and very quickly things become way more serious, and somebody starts to be like, well, wait a minute, I want to renegotiate some of this, and you don't already have paperwork in place, and now you're just 6 months in and you're not even focusing on the business, you're focusing on the drama with your co-founder. One thing I have to flag, I've always noticed people then think I'm speaking from experience in that particular thing. I'm not speaking from that perspective. I'm speaking from the perspective that I talk to founders daily about this type of stuff, and that's where this came from. So that's what I'd recommend on the partnership co-founder thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, give them a round of applause. Awesome. So as we react to the last thing, tell them where they can find you.
At Eat Famous.
At Zach Thomas.
At Dark Mark _.
Awesome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming. Make sure you go try some more Narai. Try some more Nibbles. Shout out to Nikki's Kitchen. And thank you to all our sponsors that made this event happen. Oh, and the swag bags will be on the right-hand side. And make sure you get some of those as well. All right? Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen.